Well, welcome everyone. This is the very first of, we hope, many, many, many podcasts by Wayne and Will. And Will, you know, the topics we have, or the general perception, explain to the audience exactly what we're going to be talking about.
Well, we don't really know what we're going to be
That's exactly right.
It's
we don't know.
Like the Seinfeld of dog show podcasts.
It's a dog show podcast about nothing.
Yeah, it's just going to roll. But I do think, Wayne, I think we should, because we don't have a name yet, I think anybody who's actually listening to this, if they think of something that they think they should call us that's not rude, I think they should send it in to us, and we should let them choose the name of our podcast.
I absolutely agree. And Will, you have your email address, which is?
Oh, Will Alexander at Dog Show Tips. No. Dogshowtips@gmail.com.
There you go. Dogshowtips@gmail.com, ladies and gentlemen.
That way Dr. Ernie can deal with it.
That's right. We have to have Dr. Ernie on board. He keeps us organized, right?
Or somebody. He's in the background right now, Ernie is.
We do have a plan, though. The plan is to get this thing down once a week. We're going to stick to it. And it's going to be ready by Thursdays, because the whole idea is to have you listen to this on your way while you're driving to dog shows. And hopefully every Thursday, we'll all be out driving the dog shows coming up soon. So this will be one of your pacifiers on the way. Yeah. And Will, speaking of that, drive time, something for your name suggestions. There you go. Throw it all out there.
Exactly. More drive, driving Miss Doggy, driving, I don't know, Doogie and I. No.
That's right. The Beagle Boys? No, we don't want to go there.
No, I won't go into that.
Anyway.
And any topics anybody wants us to maybe touch on, we're no promises, but, you know, they want us, we'll look at it. I don't know.
Yeah, send them into Will's email.
Dogshowtips@gmail.com.
That's right. You got it. What was that again, Will?
That's dogshowtips@gmail.com.
Absolutely. Brought to you by Alexander's Original Dog Shampoos.
Thank you, Don Pardo.
That's right. All right. What have you been up to? Well, I know you had it, you know, we're starting off with some in good jest, but we really have, you had a serious thing happen this weekend, and maybe you want to just talk about it a bit.
It was kind of a rough weekend. I've been transporting dogs for a living since there's no dog shows up here. And I got a message yesterday, mid-morning, from a dear friend, Judy Taylor. And she asked me if I saw the news. And I'm like, what news is that, Jude? And it was announcing the passing of Lori Golvan. Lori Golvan was a handler up here in Canada that I've known most of my life. We're about the same age. She actually was her birthday today. She would have turned 54. The last few years of her life had been really hard on her, because she was diagnosed with Huntington's disease. And she was an incredible, she was a naturally gifted handler. She was tall and beautiful, and she could move with anything. It was really hard. It was hard on me because it was one of a circle of friends I grew up with. We called ourselves the Brat Pack up here in Canada at that age. I want to say mid 80s probably. And there was Belter, Doug Belter, and Shauna Redard, and Shannon Shear, and Allison Alexander, and Lori Golvan, and there was Dougie McIntyre. There was a bunch of us. We just sort of hung out, and we just bullshitted about what we were going to do in this sport, and none of us really even knew what we were going to do at that point. Yeah. And so it was kind of tough. I was driving along, and it was kind of hard when it sunk in that somebody from our brat pack was now gone. You know, it kind of hit home. So it was a hard drive home, and it made me. I had a lot of memories of Lori driving home, and we weren't best friends, but we were what I call dear friends.
Yeah.
We would touch base once in a while and to see how things are going and hang out.
Well, you know, it does remind us of how, you know, one of the things about the sport that keeps us going is these friendships that last a lifetime. And I remember our brat packing. Back here, I was actually back on the East Coast when I lived out there. Now, the whole New England, New Jersey, Pennsylvania group. So many of us grew up together. We all worked for handlers, and you become that tribe. And those friendships last forever. We endured the whole AIDS epidemic at the time.
Yeah.
And it was just heart-wrenching to go through, losing our friends and watching them suffer. And, but, you know, I guess if we didn't have the sport and we didn't have these friendships and they weren't so dear, they wouldn't hurt so bad. But we're fortunate that we have those and still have those great friends. Oh,
that's true. And I like, even last night when I was trying to get some sleep, because I was get up early, it was hard. I hadn't spoken to Lori in probably 8 months. And we had talked about her diagnosis, and she was really, really good at it. She never dwelled on it. She never was down about it. And so I had visions of her in my head all night, and just talking, I remember being in line at the United Dog Show in Montreal, and we're on a ramp waiting to go in, and we'd all just be standing around our trucks waiting to go in, and she was there, and it was just, you know, and that back then she lived in Montreal. She moved out west eventually out to Alberta, but Montreal, that was where I saw Lori. I saw Lori in Montreal, and it was when I went to Montreal shows, Lori was there. We hung out, you know, and it was a bunch of us that hung out, so.
Yeah. Well, we have those, we're lucky enough to have those memories. And, you know, when people from outside the sport ask me the best parts of the sport, obviously our love for dogs is certainly the common thread, but the friendships in the sport, I think we all understand each other. We all understand this crazy game and all the dedication and hours that are involved and travel. You know, we've gotten to see, I've been to places I never, ever would have been. And through my business, I would travel to places that everyone's heard of, and it would be the airport and the convention center and home. Yeah. And now we get to go into these little hamlets, little towns, and all the hockey rinks in Canada, the little tiny places and with the cold floors. And back when I was a kid, the tobacco warehouses in North Carolina, where we'd run down and try to get our 5 junior showmanship wins so we could qualify for the garden. But it's, you know, it's easy for us to complain about the sport, and we will, because that's what we do. But in general, there is so much good about it. And, we have no choice.
It just puts everything in perspective at an event like this. And
It does.
It's because I'm sure it's, she had a lot of people that loved her, but I'm sure our little circle, it's, in fact, because of what happened yesterday, a bunch of us got together yesterday and we started a WhatsApp chat line with about 10 of us.
Great.
Because we didn't want that to happen. We have such close ties, and even when we're fighting, we still love each other.
Of course.
I just don't like them sometimes.
I mean, we still talk to Belper. You know, I mean, that's that alone.
He calls me his frenemy, so of course.
And he pays us, but still, we love you, Doug. You know we do. And there's a guy that would do anything for you, and Ken, he's so talented in so many things. He can build anything. He can, he's for a pain in the neck. He's a pretty talented guy.
Well, we grew up together in the sport up here as professionals. And I believe wholeheartedly that we made each other better because we wanted to beat each other so badly.
Yep. Oh, there's no doubt. There's absolutely no doubt. You know, and that's the way it goes in the sport for people you respect and enjoy being around. Gosh, the Terrier boys, you know, want to see competition. Growing up where I did, we had, you know, a young Peter Green and Cliff Hallmark and so many great Terrier people back there. And John Marvin, you know, some of the guys that graduated into judging, you had so much respect going in their rings. It was, it was good times. We don't want to dwell too much on the old time during this podcast because we'll lose all you young whippersnappers. And there's a lot of young whippersnappers out there. Actually, the ones that do all the winning now. It's just that, you know, can't remember their names anymore.
And they look good doing it now.
That's right. Yeah. You know, Janie used to call me and she'd say, or her weekly call, she'd say, Wayno, you see that dog? What dog was that, mother? You know, that the kid with the hair, the blue, he's got the dog, the nice dog, you know, the good one from that place. He's over from there. And yeah, Janie, I actually do know who you're talking about. Oh, I miss her.
She always let me know who my competition was too. I put a dog on the table and she said, I know I did it for this dog last time, but there's a good piece of dog meat in this ring. You might have to work hard.
Oh man, I love her. I just miss her every day. And Bob too. Bob was, you know, a father figure to me in a lot of ways. And when he was very ill towards the end, very lonely after Janie passed. We had some great conversations that I will not forget. Anyway, what an influence they were on my life. And as we all have our mentors, you know. But anyway, bringing things up to date, you've been doing the transport business. That's been going good for you.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a part of the new world in the sport, right? Getting these dogs all around. And
well, because the border's closed. And when the, in the days when we just go across the border and flash a health certificate and then yeah. wave us on, those days are gone now. You know, we have all this paperwork we have to do to get dogs in. I hope that it changes soon, you know, for everybody, because it's getting expensive for some people to get their dogs back and forth.
Oh, it sure is.
Breed dogs. So it's tough. It's worked out well for like Doug and I, because we started this business and he works the one side of the lake and I work this side of the lake. And it's worked out well for us because it gave us an income while there were no shows in our areas.
Right. Right. And you know, it's another reminder that, you know, these days we do a lot of breeding back and forth between Canada and the United States, and people show on both sides of the border. And it wasn't always that way. I mean, when I was growing up in sport, it was a really rare event. And it was usually Betty Hislop that would come down, right? with her character. And boy, could there be, there's three shows that could be dedicated to Betty stories, right? Tom Bradley would have to tell them all, because he's got the best stories of all.
Well, I showed her last special up here in Canada.
Oh, did you?
Really? We got a best in show on the dog, and I didn't get a best in show, and my assistant Yvonne did. And Yvonne, I don't know if any of you remember Yvonne, but Yvonne had big hair, like big hair. And we were getting the picture taken, and Betty came over to me and she said, "That was a good job. I want to get a good picture, but what are we going to do about the hair?"
Oh, she was beautiful.
And she was serious.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, it's been a busy couple months for me. Will and I have been talking about this a lot, you know. I'm going through a time in my storied and long career where I'm back to judging, and to do so, you know, it's a whole new process to me. Well, it's a new process every couple of years, right?
Yeah.
So I'm already trying to be prepared so that when these breeds that I have become, when I'm on regular status, I have to do them three times, I guess it is. I want to get in line prepared to apply for additional breeds. But there's some hurdles I had to jump. And one is I flew down to Tallahassee 2 weeks ago to measure a beagle. I had to pass the wicket test. Mm-hmm. There are no shows anywhere around here. And there haven't been for a year, and there still aren't. So I had no choice. It was either Texas, Florida, or wait for the Tar Heel. And I had a great opportunity to get down there on a day that I could. And I had a wonderful time. I had super, and I gotta tell you, there's just been so many people down there were so helpful making it all work. And Leah James, love you. She's the show cluster chair down there. She does a heck of a job, an amazing job. And she took care of me and made sure everything got done. And a wonderful, wonderful time. A great rep, an honest, wonderful, serious, firm rep, and which I appreciate tremendously. And a great exhibitor and friend. I don't know if I should mention her name, but she was kind enough to bring a dog for me to measure, and I really appreciate that too.
As long as you measured it in.
Well, I made sure. I said, "Hey, don't bring me a 15 and a quarter now. And by the way, bring me something that will stand there, because I know it was going to happen. If they got a dog for me, I know it would have been, because it could have been Goldens, Labs, or Beagles.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, geez.
So it would have been a 10-month-old male Labrador who wouldn't stop wagging his entire rear end, you know, a foot each way with his tail. Then I've got to get the wicket over that without hitting. And that's not possible. Nope. So I decided I'll get my own dog, thank you. And a beagle would be great. And it worked out beautiful. And the bitch ended up going reserve best in show the night before.
Oh,
and
there you go.
He is beautiful. We're not going to.
I saw the video on that.
Yeah, we're not going to pimp dogs in here. That's our thing. But if you got to see her, well, she's really nice. Beautiful.
Gorgeous. I have a question for you, though.
Sure.
Because you had your license before. How much different is it now from then and now? What different procedure?
Well, I think one of the little things about the wicket test is I've measured, I can't even count the number of beagles I've measured and retrievers on the first 15 years I judged. And
were you one of those judges that kept the wicket on their holster like Maxine, and something big walked in and you flipped it out and scared those?
I'll tell you a true story. Bobby Fischer is one of the greatest dog men and handlers that ever walked this planet, and a true character. He was a rep at the time when I first started judging, and so it'd be in the 90s sometime. He was watching me do beagles, and I had an assignment, a big assignment. It was early on, maybe the third or fourth time I've ever judged him. And there was a young dog outside the ring that was absolutely a stallion. I could see him, and he was being shown by a 12-year-old, 14-year-old kid.
It's probably me.
Probably you, except it was a girl, but still.
Okay.
So I thought to myself, if you're going to stick your neck out and put this little kid up, if you measure it out or in or whatever you do, it better be right. And you better not look like you're either picking on her or providing for her by giving her an easy measure, right? So I thought, I got to measure them all. So I did. Fortunately, she was in, and she went best of winners for a 5-point major, and the world was happy. But I kept it right next to the grooming table. Next to the table where the dogs are are shown on. And it sat there the whole day. And I often did that. So a couple of days later, I get home and a package arrives. And then the company Levenger, or Levenge, whatever it is, they make leather, beautiful leather hand-tooled products. They used to make a tape measure, and it was a little one, and it was metal, and it was covered in leather, and my initials were engraved in it.
Oh, nice.
And it was gorgeous. And there was no note, nothing. But the return address was Fisher. Bobby said it. And I can tell you another true story. My other buddy, same running circles, Dougie Holloway, had a good beagle. And he was doing a lot of winning room. And I was judging in Canton. And gosh, this is how our life goes. Well, we call on the phone, and all of a sudden we're off to Sandra. Right? Yeah. So Dougie's got this big winning beagle. He's got a real shot at best in show if he can get past me in the breed. And the dog's right there. No one's ever measured him because it's Dougie and he's on fire, but he's right there. So I had this little Bobby Fischer engraved tape measure, and I put Dougie's dog up in the, Doug puts his dog on the table. And I take the tape measure and I put it right between the dog's front feet. I just let it sit there. And I went over the dog as slowly and carefully as I could. And he's going, yeah, I will kill you, Kavanaugh. I will eat your head. I will kill you. And that tape measure sat there the whole time. And after I was done, I thought, I could measure my guess. But when you get on top of him, you see him, he wasn't over. He just had that presence.
Sure, of course. Yeah.
But yeah, so now.
I'm taller than I am too. So
that's right. Now you're not allowed to hold to keep the wicket against the table. You call for it and they bring it. You can't just have it there. And you have to do a lot more than I remember doing.
Yeah.
You have to show the exhibitor who you're calling. First, you explain why. And not just that you're measuring it, but you're measuring to check whether it's over or under. And show them in the standard to make sure that you're both on the same page. I never remember doing any of that. You measure each side of the wicket, which I always did anyway. Once you adjust the wicket, you take your tape measure and you measure both legs. That's something that should always be done, and I've always done it. But I see people not, forgetting that step. And then after you measure, and you have to know how to do it, and it's just not that hard. It took me 1 second. You know where the withers are. You put your fingers there. You drop the stick. It's not that hard. But I see people mess up all the time, and it went great. It was simple, and I did well. But I was asking the woman who provided the beagle what it's been like getting measured for her in the last 5 years or so, and she said that 1 out of every 10 people know how to get it right. So when the AKC makes you take wicket tests and you think you're too cool for it, you're not. You need to practice. You need to take it every 5 years if you've had an issue. You need to listen when they tell you to take it again.
Yeah. And there's a video you can watch.
There's a great one that Patty did. Yeah. It's really good.
Yeah.
And they have bullet points and sheets, and there's no reason to fail it if you study for it. But anyway, I did that. And while I was there, I apprenticed for Johan, who's Becerra Hernandez, one of our favorite people.
Oh, he's a great guy. I love him.
And he was doing short hairs, and I got to go in the ring with him. And you know, it's a breed I know really well. So we just had good conversations before and after, but, and Barbet as well, which I love. So we had a good time down there, but the whole procedure seems more onerous than it is if you just study. Take your wicked test, do it right. Don't cheat the exhibitors, and do it for the good of the breed. That's the standard. That's the way it goes.
I took it in Orlando a couple of years ago because before COVID stopped all the world, I was scheduled to judge a poodle specialty in Ohio, and I had to pass the wicked test.
Right.
Or they would let me do it. And so I did the same thing. I measured a beagle. So.
Yeah. Well, as long as it wasn't big. But if Belter's showing it, he's going to make it do something horrible. So you couldn't have him do it. You know, the dog probably bite the wicket, or it'd be something terrible. You know, we promise not to tease Doug more than a few times each show. Is that a deal?
All right. I think
once he doesn't have a podcast. You know,
well, I think once in a while we should bring him on without him knowing. We just call him
and let him tease us because he's real good at it. He's as good as we are. There's no doubt about it. Or call Doug. We thought about that, right? Well, we thought about when we get going on a topic, if we forget a dog's name or whatever, we call a friend, reach out and call a friend.
We can't do an impasse between yourself and I, and we can't make the call.
That's right.
Call a friend.
That's right. Yeah. So be prepared out there. Yeah. None of these rehearsed things like somebody's used to be show.
I'm just going to.
None of these rehearsed things. We're just going to really wake you up. A
big, big favorite.
That's right. It was. People loved it. Anyway, so the judging approval process is something I had to go through too.
Yeah.
For new breeds. And it's been, you know, it's work. It's a lot of work.
Sure. Yeah.
And it's expensive. And I wonder about that. You know, I happen to be okay. I can spend that money and do those things. But boy, you know, you're talking about for a group, you know, you're in for a few grand.
Oh, yeah.
If not more. And that's just, I mean, it's $25 a test and 35 or 50 for a breed course. Maybe it's 35 a test, whatever it is. It could be $85 a breed if you have the course times 30 dogs in a group, maybe. So, you know, you're almost $3,000 just taking the tests.
Yeah. And you owe me the money. Yeah. I hear you.
And then you've got to go fly to specialties. You got to fly to nationals and you've got to go kennel visits. So going to a national isn't cheap. And if you choose to do that 30 times, you know, you could be talking about $20,000 a group, maybe more. Mm-hmm. And someone who's just retired or you know, had to start judging because of whatever in their world, you know, it can be a real handicap.
Well, I think we've probably missed out on a lot of good judges because they were afraid of that aspect of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, it's not.
And not just the money. I can tell you that the tests are particularly, some of them are just silly. Some of the trick questions, you know, I don't know that there's any need for a trick question, but I can see people who aren't good test takers.
Even though they're open book,
they'll change a phrase or use a phrase in a way that may throw people off. And if you're not a good test taker and you're not a good researcher or reviewer, and not everybody is, doesn't mean they're not a great dog eye, though. You know.
And then it works the opposite way. You get someone that has that memory that never forgets anything and is great at taking tests that probably shouldn't advance, but they do because of that memory, you know.
Right. I remember you saying once, you said something about if I could go to Tim Hortons and
I wrote an article called Dog Show Judge Needed No Experience Necessary. And it was all about this taking this book of standards into a coffee shop and finding a kid and say, here, study this sporting group for an hour and I'm going to test you on it. And if that kid had a good memory, he could pass without even seeing the dogs ever.
Right. Right. And I would venture to guess that some of our best judges couldn't pass all the tests.
Oh, there's no question. Yeah.
And many of them couldn't pass the procedures test as well. The good thing about the test, though, is it really does make you read the standard over and over and over again. And that's something that people probably don't do. So the good news is it makes you really read the standard more than once. And as far as the procedures thing goes, it's impossible. And but you got to know those things.
Yeah.
So it helps you read that book more than you normally would. I know I wouldn't read the thing from cover to cover. I would refer to the parts I want to, you know, I have a question about. And taking the test makes you do that at least. So there's good and bad. I do harken back to those days where you just get a call from Al Dick or Jack LaFleur, Len Brumby usually, right? Saying, hey, you know what? We've been watching you, kid. You're ready for the Terrier Loop. No, I'm not. I'm not ready. Yes, you are. Go do it. And, you know, there's some discussion about how that could work in the future.
But, well, no, there's benefits to that, or there's upsides to that, because like I said, there's handlers out there that I think are just amazing dog people that are afraid to take the test. So
yeah. And really what happens then, and I see that, you know, I have to go to these seminars, and I enjoy going to seminars, don't get me wrong. I was at the Wolfhound National a couple years ago because I have one and I go. But there was a seminar. So I figured, well, why not? I have time, I'll take it. Sure. And it was real good. Joe Breggy did it. It's a great job. But no one paid attention. There were eight of us in there. I was the only one who had a comment, question. There were people, you know, I knew one guy was sound asleep for most of it.
Yeah. The box checkers, right?
Yeah. After the break, Jill said, is anyone else going to ask a question? And I said, I bet one question will be asked. And she said, what's the question? I said, it's going to be, when do we get our certificates?
Yeah.
We got back from break and 2 seconds later, when do we get our certificates? And I thought, man, you know, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them learn about Irish Wolfhounds unless right. they really have a desire, the passion. And that's what we're missing, some of the passion.
I agree. Like I remember growing up, I would scour magazines, and we used to have a newspaper, Dogs in Canada newspaper. And I remember going through each page and placing each page. And then at the end of the magazine, I had my top whatever, and I would pick best dog in magazine.
I never knew this. This is new. I can't believe there's something we didn't know. I used to get the Gazette, the AKC Gazette, and my father would be furious if I did this before he read it. But I didn't want to be a crook. So I took scissors and I cut out just the dog. And it was usually Porter Washington in some cases, but I cut out all the pictures, because every Best in Show winner got their picture put in the Gazette every month.
Yeah, I remember.
Isn't that now? With all the Best in Shows we give out every year. But every Best in Show winner has a picture taken, and I would arrange them in groups. I would have to give the groups and then Best in Show. And on my bed, so my father would walk in and there'd be little pictures of dogs all over the bed, arranged in group orders, and he'd go, I better have read that first.
Well, I think that's what it comes down to. Like I've had some assistants over the years that just told me that, you know, they would go into my office and take out the old magazines because they wanted to see these old pictures, yeah. The old dogs.
Right. Right. Yeah, I think
Adam
it's important.
Bernard was like that constantly. Adam always was looking at
pictures. And that's, you know, that's how you do it. And that's what good people do. I think it's so important. I know that a lot of people don't have time to look at the history of these breeds, which I think is essential, and that's too bad. But pictures of these old dogs too tell you so much. You can look at if I look at pointer pictures from the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s up to today, I can see how the breed has changed. And if you don't know what you're looking at 30 years ago, you don't have any perspective on where this dog. So let's, for example, take the word moderate. Every standard's got moderate in there, right? Moderate today compared to 50 years ago, you know, a moderate Bend to Stifle 50 years ago, when you're talking about standards written by, in gun dogs anyway, by hunters, moderate means very little.
Yeah.
And now moderate means 30 feet behind the dog's butt. You know? So without those points of reference, looking back at those old pictures, it's hard to determine what those mean. But what do you think about a new system? Well, what do you think could be done? Do you think we could have a combination of these things, or groups of people who interview people? Or
I think the interview process is very important. Up here, we talked about that, about having a group of all breed judges interviewing each applicant and finding out what they really knew without resetting the standard.
Right.
I agreed with that. It was actually Dr. Michael Woods that brought that forward. And I thought that brought a bit of a one-on-one personal level to it. And like, right. I have a very good friend up here, Colin Brownlee, who he's not a test taker, but he's a brilliant guy. And he could sit and tell you anything you want to know about Siberian Huskies. to write it down. I don't know if he'd do it or not. I
think. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that interview, if it goes that way, I think we'll see a lot more prospective judges that know their stuff, really.
You know, I wonder my concern, and I really like that idea. And I think it's not going to be hard to pick the people who know. I mean, we know who knows. But there is always the issue of cronyism or not even intended cronyism. For example, when I was at the AKC, I was on the committee that reviewed the judges' applications. And Jim Edwards, Marybeth O'Neill, Ron Rell. And we'd go through them. And once in a while, someone would come in that we never heard of. And we'd stop the process and call around and find out what people knew.
That person.
Because when you're an East Coast person, you're working at the AKC, guess what? The Midwest doesn't really exist all that much. It's gotten better, but truly, it's a West Coast, East Coast mentality in a lot of ways in the sport. And it's gotten way better. It's not always that way.
It's human nature though, Wayne. Really,
it's human nature. You know where you are. You know
right.
Where you are. So this guy came in, and this is a long time ago, and his name was Bob Burnt. And we had no idea who Bob Burnt was.
Well.
And we sure found out, not only was a great guy and a great judge, but he became a board member, an influential board member. A very bright man.
I enjoyed showing dogs to Dr. Burnt. There's no question. So.
And then, of course, fast forward 40 years, 20 years, two, it was only 2 years ago. No, I think it was probably 30 years ago. You're showing a beagle, or did show a beagle, and a woman who we both really like and have come to know. And her last name had a hyphen on it, and one of the words was Burnt. And you found out that there was a relation, right?
Yeah, oh, for sure. Up there.
Isn't it Bob's niece or something?
Or cousin. I can't remember what he said, but yeah, they're definitely. And it was amazing because he had such a fondness for beagles.
Yeah.
And that's what Sherry.
And Sherry ends up with beagles. So. Yeah, very cool. Yeah. Love the way the world goes around. But yeah, something. So anyway, to avoid that, maybe a mix where you have those committees in different regions who could meet and go over a lot of potential things, but also for people who don't think that's a fair shake for them, maybe another kind of alternate process of applications too, so that if they just want a couple of breeds and they're not looking for a big chunk, they want to learn, they want to start off with one or two breeds and work through the system. Maybe there's, you know, some sort of hybrid, I hate to use that overused word, but of those two systems put together. So it's not just panels of three and four people saying you, but maybe another way also to get in. If you happen to live in a part of the country where people don't know you, you don't get to a lot of shows.
I understand that part of it.
Yeah, some kind of it. But one thing's for sure, we're always going to have good judges and bad judges.
Yep, and they tend to sort themselves out in the long run. You know, you know, people don't get very far if they're...
there is a difference though, and I think that's a modern dilemma. The modern dilemma is that clubs, and this has never been the case until the last, I don't know, 10, 20, 15 years. back in the, you know, there were no clusters. The gas crisis caused that in America, primarily because you couldn't drive. From in our club, Monmouth County County Club, it was Monmouth County on one day, Union the next day, Plainfield the next day. So you had three shows an hour apart from each other. And that's how you did it. And when the gas was such a crunch, you started to put those shows together on the same site. So people didn't have to drive. And that became certainly more things piled onto that. And it wasn't just gas, but that was one contributing factor. Well, when you did that, you could afford. You'd have $3,000 entries. You could afford to hire breeder judges. You could afford to have a lot of what we used to call provisional judges. You could do all that. Now, when you have so many clusters and so many shows, at least we did until this year, you're having, you know, you have total entries of 600-700 dogs in some of these shows, a lot of them. And the average entry from 94 was 1,700 dogs a show. And today it's 700 and some dogs a show. So you need judges that can do more than one group to make it financially feasible. So we have plenty of judges who are probably C minuses, but they have 3 and 4 groups and you have to use them. And they're not bad judges. You know, they know how to put up a sound attractive dog. But if you're looking at someone who can talk about type in each breed and talk at the national after they judge them, they might not be in that category. So it's really put a crunch on clubs to construct the system of, and it's not their fault. They have to hire multi-group judges. And if you have a half a dozen breeds, you know what I'm talking about. You know, if you have one group, you probably know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And that I hope changes as the entries go back up. And if COVID has taught us one thing, fewer shows, bigger entries, better quality.
Yeah, more depth. It's more, that's so much fun to see all the top dogs in one spot, you know.
Oh yeah.
It's like the old days. Like, I mean, back when I was growing up in, you know, Canada, we only had one show a weekend that you could drive to, and all our top dogs went there. Then they moved to the next show and they moved to the next show. Now we have, even up here, not right now because of COVID, but we had 3 directions you could go every weekend if you wanted to drive. You know? And same things happened up here though, is because our shows have gotten so small, they have to hire all breed judges to do the whole show, you know?
Right. And you're going to, and as great as the best all breed judges in the world would never tell you they're an expert in breed type in every single breed, nor should they be.
Right.
You know, there's an argument for the good of that though. Sometimes we get so hung up on breed type, on the finer points, and pointers, the veins in the ear leather, you know, the bee sting tail. Every breed has its hallmarks like that. Mm. And sometimes you can get down the road of getting so focused on those things that you may subconsciously lose track of basic instruction, sound, present, you know, the things that make a dog go down and back well and go around the ring well, right?
Well, yeah, you get some dogs that probably shouldn't be missed in their breed because of it.
Exactly.
Because they have qualities that the breed still needs.
You know? Yeah, absolutely. I remember not too long ago at a very, very, very big dog show, an English Toy Spaniel that I used to own. No, not the dog, but I've owned the breed. He placed highly in the famous group, and the breeders went crazy because he didn't have the perfect shape head and some of the features that they really require and should. But they shouldn't have been that appalled, because the reason this dog did well in that group is he was dead sound. He kept a great top. He carried himself not like an Irish Setter, like an English Toy Spaniel. And he really did have great basic structure.
And that still is breed type as far as I'm concerned.
Me too. So it's sometimes we throw the baby with the bathwater with that. And that's why multi-breed judges who aren't necessarily type experts in every breed still have a very strong and powerful use of putting up structurally sound, well-made dogs, if they know what that is. But, you know, there's always a question of that too.
We had some old-time judges up here that you knew if your dog marched down and back and carried a back line, you were probably always going to be on the winning side in his ring, because that's what he looked for. You know, he wanted 4 good legs and a hard back going around the ring, and by Jesus, you showed that to him, he'd find it.
Janie used, and by the way, when we say Janie, it's Jane Forsythe. I hate to do the first names and not tell people who we are. And Jane Forsythe used to say to me when I worked for, I know how they like him, Wayno. How's that? Fat, hairy, and wide behind. And you know, that's the kind. They don't want them.
Remember when she was going through that phase where she was selling those diet pills?
Oh no.
She was so much fun. She'd tell you, well, you don't want to do this. You don't want to become one of those heavy handlers.
You buy this vitamin.
Wake up one day and
okay, we just crossed the border into stuff that you know, we probably wouldn't give it a normal, but we don't have anyone monitoring us. Well, we can do whatever the heck we want. The show about nothing, which is perfect.
I miss all those characters though. My God, so much.
You know what though, Will? Here's the problem. We're old enough where we're getting to be those characters. Adam's probably telling stories about us right now.
Oh, I'm sure he is. I'm sure he is. Dithering old fool wandering around in his house coat.
I can't wait till I get to the point where, not that I'll ever be a Billy Kendrick, because no one ever will, By the way, for you young whippersnappers, he's one of the greatest judges that ever lived, and he couldn't have been any more eccentric. He would do things that only he could get away with. But I can't wait to get to the point where, like, hey, bring that over here and just put it here and try to take it. And those are, yeah, y'all, wait, just bring it and do whatever you want in the ring. It would be
my, my ideals. This is my scenario when I'm an old man judging best in show. I want to go through the whole procedures, go to the table, mark the book, take my ribbon, walk out there, have a total blank look on my face, and have to shuffle back to the table and see who I decide to put up. Who was that?
That would be great. At the Coonhound shows that I used to do, the giant, we're talking about 300-400 entries, by the way. If you think you know about Coonhounds by watching 3 or 4 at the AKC shows, I can recommend you go to one of these large ones. It's helpful to fill your eye and see all different ends of the spectrum. I'm not saying better or worse, don't worry. But Jim Edwards would judge them for me once in a while. And the way it works is the trophies are, they're 9 feet tall. And if you ever try to shrink them, you're going to hear about it. They want the tallest trophies in the world. I don't know what you do with them, but they are tall.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they'd string them into the back of the pickup on the way home next to the dog box. And it would look really cool. These giant, everyone knew you won. So as a judge, what you did was you went to the table and you picked up that giant trophy and you walked over and you handed it to the handler. That's how you said you win. Right. So Jim decided to break this 1,000-year-old tradition by doing it slightly differently. He took the trophy and he put it in the middle of the ring. He just sat it there. And then he walked up to, I remember the first time he did, he walked up to this woman and said, he said, as only Jim could, darling, my back's not what it used to be. Could you do me a favor and go pick up that trophy for me that I left out there? And as soon as she picked it up, she realized, and he said, you can raise it now. Yeah, and everybody went crazy.
That's cool.
We should be able to do stuff like that.
Yeah, I don't think we can get away with it anymore.
Yeah, no, you got to go by the rules.
Yeah.
Everyone's got to do it the same.
I think of all the things that judges have has whispered to me while they're going over dogs, they could never get away with it now. And it was right. So much fun, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, in hockey, I don't know if, do you watch hockey, Will?
Do I watch hockey? I try to occasionally.
I watch it once in a while too.
I do it for the commercials. You
know? Yeah. By the way, our other phone calls, those who are listening, are nothing about dogs. They're all about hockey. But we'll leave that out of this for now. But in hockey, you know, 20 years ago, if you celebrated after a goal, you'd probably get a good stick in the ribs the minute later, right? You wouldn't do that.
Don Cherry said, look at Bobby Orr.
That's right.
He puts his head down and skates back to the bench.
That's exactly what you're supposed to do. But over time, people have talked about the celly, right? And there's been some great ones. Now, there have been some that have gotten guys clocked in the head. I remember one specifically. It was a skateaway shoot kind of thing and did not go down well with the other team. So, or even with your own team.
Disrespectful.
Disrespectful. But there is now a way to do respectful cellies in hockey. And it's added to the entertainment bag. It's made it fun. And what's wrong with that? Without going over the top, because they're hockey players, they're not going to be stupid. Yeah. So why couldn't we have a little fun in the ring at dog shows?
Oh, you know? For sure. Yeah. I agree. I remember a buddy of mine, Johnny Glover. Remember he had some good dogs to show, but he had a giant schnauzer he did a lot of winning with. And he was out there, had his dog all set up, and the judge came in. I think it was actually Melbourne. And Melbourne pointed his finger at him, and Johnny pointed right back at him.
Beautiful. That's great. That is wonderful. Oh, we got a million stories like that. A million of them.
Yeah.
A million of them. Roy Holloway, one of my favorite judges to get away with stuff like that. And Dougie's not too bad either, by the way. He still gets away with it. But he always finds a good dog. He knows what he's doing. But he can make you smile doing it. And that's probably need a little more of that back in the ring, right?
Yeah, for sure.
I know it. At Kenny's shows, Kenny in Virginia and Scott File is one of, I mean, some great people put those shows on. Scott is amazing. These are the Grays Lake shows. And we call them Grays Lake, but there's real names for them. Little Fort Kennel Club and others.
Black Hawk.
And by the way, this summer is going to be a giant, they really did a cool thing. They put together a week long whole giant cluster of dog shows, specialties, and seminars. And it's going to be a festive occasion because no one's had shows running for so long. So this June.
What we should do next week then, Wayne, is.
That's right.
We should call Ken.
Oh, by the way, and I am here to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, Ken Murray, by the way, we're going to use last names now. I guarantee you, I'm not bad. But if I can't remember some arcane dog's name or pedigree from 1967, Ken.
Yeah.
He is the encyclopedia. I am merely the little one that they sold in the supermarket. He's the real deal.
Oh my God.
And not only knows their names, he knows their show records. Yeah, you know, they had 57 best in shows that year. And next year he had 12, but then he got sold to the other. I mean, it's crazy what he knows.
He told me about the first Irish setter he showed. And not only did he tell me about the first Irish, he told me about all the Irish setters that were in the ring with him that day that he competed against.
It's really otherworldly. It's
frightening. He doesn't know what he had for lunch.
I know. That's right. Well, you know, that's the way it goes. No, our no, buddy George.
We love you.
That's what we do. And we've been calling on you too.
We're going to call you, Ken.
But anyway, check out that cluster. It's really going to be fun and educational through seminars. Well, I know hound seminars for sure. So, but that's what clubs have to get doing to restart this thing this year, right? Up here, where haven't been any shows, or for you down here, where there haven't been any shows, to put a group together like that and see how it goes. So, looking forward to that. And I think clubs are going to get creative too. I know Kalamazoo's got a great weekend planned. In November for sure as well. So things are starting to open up, I hope.
Well, let's see if we remember next week to touch on those things.
Yeah, as long as people don't get stupid, we're having a surge again in Michigan. We had this thing knocked, but if these numbers keep going up, you know, it's just people, it's, you know, spring break and people letting down their guard because the restaurants are open in Michigan now.
Yeah, they opened
up. All of a sudden the numbers are going up. And which is great, you know, keeps the economy rolling, but if people are careful, it won't keep our dog shows from starting up again. So do your part. I don't care what you believe in or think. We want dog shows, damn it.
And it's not difficult. It's not difficult to wear a mask, you know.
It's not.
I always feel like when I'm because at the border, they want you to wear a mask when you're talking to the customs guard officers. And so you're sitting in line waiting for your turn to go. And then as you pull up, you lift your mask up, and I always feel like I'm about to rob a bank.
I know.
And
give me all your passports.
All right, let's do this.
Let's get it over the border. Let's get this done.
Oh, wow.
Beautiful. But really, seriously, folks, everybody's been great. I mean, the shows I've been to, everybody's been super about it.
Yeah,
and when not, Steve Keating, bless his heart, such a good soul. He was judging when I was in Tallahassee, and in ringside, people started to cluster together a little bit. And he made an announcement, ladies and gentlemen, please separate. We want to stay healthy. We want to keep having dog shows. And just do your part. My mom's going to be 100 April 30th, April 29th. And she couldn't be. Our daughter's April 30th. Our daughter's April. She will be. Our daughter's April 30th. She's such a bright, sharp woman. When this whole thing went on, she said to me, you're telling me that people at dog shows don't want to put a little piece of cloth over their face to help the sport in the country. When we were kids and we had a problem, we went off to war and got killed or went without food, stockings, because hose were used in silk for parachutes, metal, gasoline, cars. We did without that stuff. We're talking about a little piece of cloth over your face. Get over it.
We can't find a new Netflix series to watch. We get upset.
That's right. My internet slowed that. Oh, really? Because what you just typed went all the way up in outer space, then hit a satellite, came all the way back down and found you and printed it on your little screen. That's a miracle. That's not slow. That is a miracle.
That's right.
And you are too, Will. Bless your heart.
So are you, Peter.
I don't know. It's good to have each other as fans anyway. We've probably been at it for about an hour, and we promised we'd keep it there. So let us know.
Dr. Ernie's in the background going, enough, enough is enough, enough.
But it could be a long drive to the show, right? The drive time. You know? So anyway, we need your thoughts on naming this thing. Wayne and Will is just too common.
And be polite, though. But like I'll read the ones that aren't polite, but we're not going to use them.
That's right. And maybe, Will, we could make it a contest, and you could send them a bottle of Alexander's original shampoo.
Alexander's original shampoo.
That's right. We'll get you a free bottle.
Shampoo of Will, champions.
And he can autograph the bottle for you. You'll never use it on your dog. Use it on yourself and hope you turn out as good looking as Will when you're done using it.
That's why we're have this radio show.
That's exactly why. That's right. So send us your thoughts on ideas to talk about, although we have no shortage, it seems. Ideas for names of the show and any other things you want to throw at us that are polite. Because we have mothers, you know. Remember that. We have mothers and kids. And so kids, they read you things about us, and they will come get you.
Jamie or Liam, Rattle, don't send in rude things about your father.
That's right. Absolutely. All right, Will, anything else, buddy?
Oh, I think that's it. I think I've had enough of you.
I think I've had enough of you, too. No more guitar lessons, though. That's too torturous. I tried to give Will guitar lessons via Zoom. And some things you got to do in person.
Yeah.
Peace be with you, brothers and sisters. We love you all equally. We always say that in case Doug's listening. We love you all equally. And bless your hearts. We hope to see you soon. And that's all I've got to say about that.
All right. Stay safe out there, everybody.
Take care.